and you keep trying to find ground, keep trying to put your feet down, and you're not quite sure where it is. And so I'm back having many, many experiences that are similar to that I had early on in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm dealing with fundamental issues in my life. I'm dealing with ego. I'm dealing with my pride. I'm dealing with my identity. I'm dealing with success. I'm dealing with fear. I'm dealing with anger. I'm dealing with frustration. So I think I'm right back. I mean, I sit in meetings today, and I feel sometimes more new than I've ever felt in my life. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was 23 years old. And I had started drinking, I was 14 years old. And I was one of those people that literally, from the first drink of alcohol, was an alcoholic. It's kind of a classic case of whatever that type of alcoholic is. It was just magic. I found an answer. And I went after alcohol, and alcohol worked very well for me. It took care of the differences. It made me feel part of. It gave me a feeling of omnipotence and well-being, and made me unaware of the differences that I had from other people. We hear everybody describe their first or early relationships with alcohol and drugs. I mean, they're really profound, and they're profound because they work. You know, they kind of answer important questions for us and work as techniques to deal with issues that you know, everybody has, and we choose those to answer them. So for a long time, I relied on alcohol to do things for me. I got a sense of euphoria from it. I loved the people. I loved the action. I liked everything about it. And then alcohol started to get in my way and started to experience a cost for my behavior. And in the early part, when I started to experience costs like tickets and accidents and trouble at school and trouble at home, behavioral issues and reputation issues and money issues and some of those sorts of things, hell, it never even occurred to me that the cost of my behavior wasn't worth it. You know, it seemed like, sure, I mean, in order to have this wonderful thing in my life, this stability, which is so important to me, I guess there's probably a little cost, and once in a while my timing gets off or I run into a bad batch of ice or something, but I, you know, it's really overall the balance is still very positive, and then as we know, it just starts to swing and it gets more negative and more negative and more negative, and by that time, my relationship with it, I just have no choice. I'm a drinker. And it's one of the most important stabilities of my life, and there's just no question I'm going to make whatever adjustments I have to have, because drinking, life seemed to me that I had almost like a built-in failure mechanism. For some reason, life didn't seem to work for me. It seemed like I was fairly well equipped in the business of living life. I should have gone out and have it be all okay, but somehow I would go on out and the wheels kept coming off it. You know, everything I touched, I started, I was a great starter. You know, for the first 50 yards of a 100-yard race, I was pretty good. Just never finished. And rooms are just full of people who know an awful lot about being good starters and poor finishers. And I had a frustration with life. It just seemed like, you know, and I really think we are so, our book talks about, we are so self-centered that it never occurs to us that almost everybody else in the world is going through the same assessment that we are going through. I mean, we're just so positive that it's only our assessment. I think one of the great discoveries when we come to Alcoholics Anonymous is then at least we open it up to find out that alcoholics go through what we go through. You know, later on we find out that even some normies go through what we go through, and that's kind of distressing, you know, because we really don't like to identify with people who are normal. And we hate to think that we really have much in common. It would kind of lower our status and, you know, be kind of distressing. It could be that the sorts of adjustments that we go through are just human adjustments, that everybody goes through them, that we experience them in a somewhat exaggerated manner. And for me, alcohol was just an enormously important... I don't think I could have made it through what I went through without medicating it. I mean, that was just the way it was. And so as the problem with my drinking just got bigger and bigger and bigger, and people kept pointing to the problem, kept saying, Bob, you got a drinking problem. No, I got a drinking answer. Do not have a drinking problem. It's a little bit of difficulty with it, but I do not have a drinking problem. I got a drinking answer. It's the other thing. It's drinking. Drinking makes it tolerable. I can put up with the rest of that stuff. And they kept on saying, no, your answer has become the problem. And every once in a while, I take a look at that. Every once in a while when I would get into enough trouble, I would seriously take a look at to see whether my answer had become my problem. And after a couple of days of abstinence or taking a look at it, it always seemed like, no, it was worth one more, you know, run at it, and I'd go back out and I'd take another run at it. And because in sobriety, I experienced an anxiety. My life didn't instantaneously get better. I didn't all of a sudden become what I thought you were telling me I'd become if I just wouldn't drink. So it seemed clear to me that abstinence, or not drinking, not doing it, was not the answer to my problem. And so, conversely, drinking wasn't the issue. By the time I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was in enough trouble physically and socially and mentally and familially and civically with my alcohol drinking that I just had no choice. I had tried everything else. My family had had me see psychiatrists, and I'd tried. I was a pretty active Catholic, and I tried a lot of retreats and spiritual methodology, and pretty active in the church, and tried copying other people's behavior, and I tried interactions with police and judges and all those sorts of things. And I just had run out of things to do, and I'd run out of rope. I just didn't know what to do, and my life was just coming apart at the seams. And finally, after a period of time, I turned myself into Alcoholics Anonymous. And I showed up at that door about as like we all showed up. I mean, it was I was confused and I was scared. And the only reason I was there is I did not know what else to do. I literally did not know. I was diagnosed an alcoholic at age 19, and I thought that was about as goofy. You know, 1961 or 2, that didn't seem like that was a possibility. Today, that wouldn't be very unusual, but it was a little unusual then, and I didn't like the diagnosis nor the identification. So I showed up scared and confused. What I found was to open a whole new adventure, the likes of which I had never expected, and the adventure of which I'm still involved in, still the primary adventure of my life. I found a group of people who it was like I'd come home. I found a group of people, it was like finding your family. It had been like being on a foreign planet and opening a door and finding your brothers and sisters and your mom and dad and your cousins and everybody, and you walk in and, gee, they look like you and they sound like you. And they chew gum like you. They drive cars like you. They talk like you. They listen like, there was a level of familiarity. It literally was just this awesome identification, because for a long time, of course, we just kept getting more alienated and more alienated. We were in trouble with everybody around us, and so we severed most of the relationships. We were really just, people kept bouncing off of us, and by the time we get here, we're pretty alone. By the time we get here, we aren't much like very many other people, and so our need levels are really high. And it was just wonderful, the experience I had in Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was magical. I mean, I listened to you share things about yourself that I'd been hiding about me for an awfully long time, and it was just an awe-filled experience for me for quite a while. The most wonderful thing about it is that I was able just to kind of let go and surrender. I came in and I was in enough trouble, combination of enough trouble and the wonderful experience of having you know more about me than anybody else had ever known about me, and then presenting me with a way out of my dilemma was enough for me just to kind of let go and lay back and say, okay, I'm going to do what you tell me to do. And for a while, that was it. I just went to 6 or 7 meetings a week. I hooked into one of the men who's now my sponsor. Well, both the men were now my sponsors. Hooked into a couple of very active men, and I just started to go to meetings. I started to do 12-step work. I would go to a meeting at 8 o'clock, and I'd get home about midnight, and we'd stay late, and we'd talk AA, and they'd give advice. And it was... I was under the tutelage of, day before yesterday, I was over at my sponsor's house. He now has 37 years of sobriety, and he's just a wonderful, calm, wise guy. I mean, he's got an enormous amount of common sense and a great program, and he's been just a wonderfully active member of Alcoholics Anonymous ever since he came in. And he was perfect for me. Just couldn't have found a teacher who would have been more perfect. And he taught by example. I just kind of hung around him and I've always been a copier, so I just kind of hung around Warren and started to copy Warren. And that's always been, my phoniness kind of saved me in Alcoholics Anonymous. I came in as a phony. I'd look around, when I'm here, I wear jeans and a cowboy hat. When I'm in San Francisco, I wear a dress. And when I'm home, I wear fur, and I go, so whatever, whatever is kind of called. So I showed up, when I showed up around Warren, I just, started to copy Warren. And I copied my way, when I hung around people who drank the way I like to drink, I copied some pretty poor behavior and seemed natural to me. And I got myself into a lot of trouble doing that. I started to copy well behavior. And my life That first year, the book talks about a number of, at one point it talks about recreating your life. Another point it talks about almost like a transformation, about our lives just having a spiritual experience. And literally when Jung talked to Roland about, Roland comes back and says, isn't there any hope for me? I mean, can't you do anything with me? Roland had gone over there and gone through treatment with the greatest psychologist in the world, or psychiatrist in the world, and comes back and he's drunk and he flies back and he, you know, and Jung says, I can't help you, you know. Must be a pretty profoundly wise man with a sense of humility. And he said, I can't do anything with you. You're a hopeless alcoholic. I've not been effective with anybody of your type. Now, Roland, if Roland knew one thing, he knew he was an exception. All alcoholics. If I were to stand up here and say 97% of all people, you would immediately stop listening to the 97% and listen for what I'm going to say about the 3%. Because we would all identify with the 3% in the room. Everybody in this room is an exception. And Jung told him that there, from time to time, there were some exceptions. The people had complete transformations of personalities, complete reorientations of personalities. Their whole value systems were changed, their whole lives were changed, and literally they were not the same people. And from time to time, and upon occasion, that was happening, and that was what he was trying to have take place in Roland's life, and he was unsuccessful, and he recommended that Roland somehow, if Roland could have that sort of spiritual transformation, if he could have that change take place in his life. And Roland said, well, that's not too bad. I'm pretty active in my church. And Jung looked at him and said, your church won't do it, which I think was also pretty interesting. I don't think it's impossible the churches do it, but at least he knew enough about Roland and knew enough about his relationship with that he said, your church is not going to do it. Now, Roland came back and had that spiritual experience. He had it in the Oxford group and had it in Alcoholics Anonymous, and he, of course, never took another drink, and his life was okay. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I had that experience of what James called the educational variety, and over a period of time, I made enough changes sufficient for me to remain sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, the power that is in the program, one of the great lines I ever heard Chuck Chamberlain give, one time he went down to the Peachford, I don't even know the correct name of it, but it's a large symposium on alcoholism given in Atlanta, and I think it's given annually, and it's something about the Peachford Conference or something, and a lot of the experts come from all over the country and all over the world. And Chuck was a wise member of Alcoholics Anonymous and never participated much in anything outside of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he was asked to go to this conference, and he did. And I was at an AA conference with him shortly after he came back from it, and someone asked him about what he thought about the interaction and how it went. And he said a profound thing. He said, you know, someone asked him, do they understand Alcoholics Anonymous? And he said, they don't know much about surrender. And I didn't think, it was almost like a throwaway line. I mean, he wasn't trying to, you know, and I walked away and I thought about that. And I really think the power in our program is the power of surrender. Our book talks about that we'll never be able to quit drinking based on self-knowledge. You know, I think that most of us come to Alcoholics Anonymous looking for an answer. Okay. And the answer that most of us want is intellectual. We want something that makes sense to us. Explain it to me. The reason that most of us is we wanted the answer to be able to, we wanted to be able to understand it, and we wanted control over the answer. Tell me what it is. If I agree with it and it makes sense to me and I can see the effect that it will have on me and I agree to undertake the effect that it has on me, I'll do it. Now, the problem is that we're the problem. You know, I mean, we're the problem, and we want to be able to understand and approve and agree with the answer before we implement it. And, with, I mean, that just flat doesn't work. I mean, that combination kills more alcoholics. But it seems, I mean, it almost seems impossible that you'd ever grasp or take an answer that you didn't understand, didn't agree with, didn't approve of. I mean, why the heck would you ever do that? That seems almost equally as irresponsible. It's our lives. I mean, why wouldn't we, if we care so much about how we live our lives, we want our lives to work so well. I mean, shouldn't we agree? I mean, shouldn't we care? Shouldn't we have some understanding? Shouldn't we think it's in our best interest? And the fact is that almost all of us have been trying desperately to do things that were in our best interest for an awful long time before we came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and we almost killed ourselves. We almost killed ourselves. We did burn most of the bridges in our lives and lose many of the relationships in our lives, and we lost considerable amounts of money and educations and children and husbands and wives and jobs and pride, and we lost an awful lot of things trying to do the very best things for ourselves, trying desperately to have our lives come to order using every bit of intelligence, every bit of authority, every bit of power, every bit of knowledge, every bit of help that had ever come around us. We used all those things and we almost killed ourselves before we came to Alcoholics Anonymous. What I ran into was a group that was large enough, a power that was larger than me, that was big enough to allow me to surrender. I didn't even know that that's what I did. I did not even know that that's what I did. I just flat gave up and was able to listen. You spoke a language that was different than I'd ever heard before, and I became a sponge. And the reason I became a sponge is I kind of quit. I just quit. Okay, I'm a guy who, in all other conversations, I'm listening for how you want me to be. Okay, you know, how am I supposed to be? What am I supposed to say? How funny am I supposed to be? How loud am I supposed to be? What's my turn? What's my time? And I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I stopped doing that for a period of time. It was just like I just quit. And I just listened, and I just started, and it was confusing. I didn't understand it. It was a language of the heart. It wasn't very intellectual. I couldn't understand why the hell you stayed after meetings and talked to people about marital issues and job issues and money issues and children issues. I didn't know what those had to do with drinking, and I didn't know why anybody would ever ask about how to go home and have a conversation with their wife. I mean, I thought, what in the heaven's name is going on here? And I didn't know that, and so I just listened. And what I found is a group of people, I started to get a sense that people use the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous to live rather than not to drink. I got a sense that you told me that the physical part of my disease was 10% of my disease and the other parts of it were a much wider swath. And that if I could apply those principles in my life, I wouldn't have to drink. But after I listened to you for a while, you weren't applying the principles just not to drink. You said that in your language a lot, but you were applying the principles to improve your life. So the bad news is we have a disease. If we don't interfere with it and don't find an answer for it, it's going to kill us. And the good news is that in order to get well from the disease, you have to learn how to live. Therein lies, I think, the largest gift that Alcoholics Anonymous has to offer is for people who have problems that are destroying their lives, we offer them a solution, which is what everybody has been seeking since time started. The gift is that in order to get well from your disease, you will end up being wiser and maybe weller, and having a better quality of life than you ever would have had you never had the disease. I mean, there's the gift that I think Alcoholics Anonymous gives. The problem is that all you have to do to get that is die. You know, how much do you have to, give away to go get that? Well, you have to give away everything. To whatever extent your ego's in the game, to whatever extent you use just your intellect and your own authority and your own power, you kind of block off the channels that I think that the program tries to use to have us have the changes in personality take place. That's spiritual. And I really think that what we find in Alcoholics Anonymous is that we come in and we have, that most of us try it on an intellectual basis. We find that most of us are so emotionally unstable that the emotion dominates the intellect. Okay, and that most of us get squirrely. We can learn the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous, but they're unavailable to us because when we get in trouble, our emotions get so darn heightened that we can't, you don't pull out your notes, you don't pull out the big book when you're, grabbing your child by the hair or screaming at your wife or running out of your work at 2 o'clock in the afternoon or writing a bad check. I mean, you just don't pull it out when that time because you're the ocean's roaring in your ears, and you're just as crazy as we all are. But what we find is that while the emotions dominate the intellect, the spirit dominates emotions and brings an order that is someplace that is just literally unavailable in any other way, and it brings a peace. And it brings a type of solution that just is unavailable in any other way. So the answer that I think the program has, time and it's shown to us in our book, and our book just keeps saying it and saying it and saying it, that we're the problem. Self-centeredness is the problem. Ego is the problem. The answer is to find a relationship with God. The answer is to give up. The answer is surrender. Okay. And most of us in this room surrendered enough that we literally altered one of the most important patterns in our lives, or alcohol and drug use. I mean, it's pretty profound. We did that daily. And we came in here and entered into a relationship with a program and principles such that our lives changed and we never drank again. That's awesome. But as awesome as that is, for some reason we then kind of reverse that process. And as we know that drinking is only the symptom of our disease, if drinking is a symptom of our disease, when we stop drinking, our disease exhibits itself mentally and spiritually. When we stop drinking, it isn't like the obsessiveness leaves. Most of us in the room know that we keep obsessiveness and compulsiveness and weirdness into sobriety. I know that most of you don't have any issues in sobriety, but hell, I even had issues in sobriety. And man, I know that's kind of disappointing and disgusting, but you know, it's. But we start to have issues, and at first, I think when we first come in and we're sober, we relate. Would someone over there grab me a cup of coffee? I have what? If there's any. Straight. The. But notice this, and this is what I think. I'm talking a little bit longer, but I'll probably talk less the second session. And so, the process that I went through, and the process that I deal with today, is. Thanks a lot. I came to AA. Prior to coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was absolutely convinced I was unique and different. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I absolutely learned that I was not unique and different, that I was like you. I became part of you, and that was the phenomenon, getting my personality out of the way. I stopped being Bob. What I was looking for was an expert on Bob. I promise you. I wanted someone who knew Bob so well he could look through Bob. That I could even keep putting up the lies in the front and all those things, and I want someone who could look right through Bob. I never found anybody. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I kind of stopped being Bob, and I became an alcoholic, and I found 100 teachers. I found people who could look right through me, and I could bring an issue to them, and it didn't matter if they knew my aunt. It didn't matter if they knew my mom and dad. It didn't matter if they knew my employer, because they were talking about principles. And the principles seemed to apply no matter what the personalities are, and the principles seemed to apply no matter what the circumstances were. And I had teachers and I had answers. But after about a year of sobriety, when I started to ask a question, I got an answer and I wasn't sure you were right. I started to reassert my ego and I started to reassert my individuality, and I started to be more concerned with finding an expert on Bob. Because I thought you helped me with my alcoholism, I'd stop drinking. And I had these other issues that were happening in my life. And I started to grasp and struggle and deal with those other issues. And I became more and more convinced as time went on that the other issues that I had were Bob's issues. Because hell, you would help me deal with my alcoholism, but there must be some other stuff that I have. Once again, I'm just looking at my insides and your outsides. You know, I'm so convinced that no one else has these problems that maybe that if I have money issues and sex issues and parenting issues and work issues and ego issues and those sorts of things, those are the peculiarities of Bob. And now that you've really dealt with my alcoholism, I'll start working on those issues and I'll get it better. And the struggle that I've had in Alcoholics Anonymous has been that issue. It's the damnedest thing in the world. I mean, I think it's absolutely endemic to human beings. I think it's as normal that it just seems awesome that we can have the experience of surrender and transformation, that we can walk in here and have our lives be such. You know, when I read that big book, I couldn't believe in those 30 stories that those men and women whose lives were absolutely destroyed came in and had some sort of experience and never drank again. I mean, that's awesome. That is awesome. And we have that experience, and yet we then, you know, don't seem to be able to, as regularly as we would like to, apply it to the other issues of our life. So the thing that I'm talking about, and I want to bring up and recommend that we kind of discourse on, is that ongoingly, maybe the biggest power that we have in the program is surrender. And that what we've done is we've gotten out of relationship with surrender, and what we've done is we say, okay, I'll take it from here. This is my job. You've gotten me well. I must have, now the work issue must be my issue. You've gotten me well, I'll work on my marriage. You've gotten me well, I'll work on my finances. So the two things that we do that I think, and it makes sense to us, because I mean that's what a good person would do. We take those things on and so we're convinced that there are issues, number one. And number two, what we're dealing with is the problem and not the cause. We're dealing with the result. Okay, we're at the end of the pipe where the water is coming out. We're trying to push the water back in the pipe. We're not at the end of the pipe where there's a faucet. You know, I mean, when we deal with money issues, we work on money. But money issues don't have much to do with money. They have to do with ego and compulsiveness and a few other things, you know, and until we really kind of, but what we always work on the symptom. That's the problem that we had with alcoholism when we came to Alcoholics Anonymous. We worked on the symptom. Okay, we were working on drinking and not drinking. So when we came to Alcoholics Anonymous, they said we never spent any time working on not drinking. Okay, we spent our time looking at the first step and surrender, and then once we did that, we started to work on the solution, which is finding a power greater than ourselves. So, all right, I'm going to stop there, and then we'll talk about. So what I think is we lose, I or we lose some of the profound identity with my recovery program, and thinking that recovery program is going to be the answer to some of the other issues that are going on in my life. The whole world gives absolutely no encouragement for powerlessness. I mean, every message you get, I mean, you know, the average American citizen today watches 6 or 7 hours of television. I mean, it's just, we are inundated with messages that say, hey, you can have everything. First of all, if you don't have what I'm advertising, you should be unhappy. I mean, you should be really miserable. So what we have is about as much encouragement in our society. I mean, and it's very subtle. We don't even show the product, you know, we don't even say much about the product. We just show a pair of breasts and the product. You know, I mean, it's very subtle that we just make connections to say you should be unhappy. So there's an encouragement. The commercial, there's a whole psychology in our world today that I think encourages us being anxious, upset. The pace of the world is going very fast, and there's just an enormous amount of change and uncertainty out there. And then on top of that, I think the whole encouragement that everybody else will give you is increase your power. Be smarter. Look better. Okay? Be, you know, get in shape. Take control of your life. Hell, you don't want to be, I mean, get in charge. And if you're really cool, I mean, if you want to be a success, boy, you better be in charge. I mean, it is, I mean, and, you know, last night when Beverly talked about I didn't cause it, I can't cure it, and I can't control it. I mean, I really think that an awful lot of us in Alcoholics Anonymous would do very, very well to start adopting that as the personal slogan in our own lives, is that we didn't cause our alcoholism, we can't, you know, we didn't cause it, we can't cure it, and we cannot control it. And I really think that the longer we're around, that sometimes we really do try to control it. And what's even more interesting, if the answer is finding a relationship with the God of varying understanding, most of us have a relationship with God of control. We want to direct the answer, you know. All right. Does that provoke any ideas for that? What might level of confusion that high? Level of disinterest that profound? George has set up a mic over here. What we'd like to do is start dialoguing, and he will pass that to whoever has a question. If you just identify yourself by your first name, and then we'll, I don't know if it's a question or a statement, and then we can inject that in. It's not working, David.
Just call him.
Hi, my name is Jane. I'm a member of Al-Anon. I just wanted to say that I think in Al-Anon maybe we have it a little easier, because when I came in and I was taught the steps, I was told that I was powerless over people, places, and things. So it wasn't just alcoholism. And that's really how I work the steps. So I think it's easier for us. And I also agree with what you said about how everyone, the world now, teaches us that we need power, because my alcoholic is my son. And I always feel the message you get is, you know, you need to control this child. He's not even a child, but I feel that the outside world is saying to me, you know, what's wrong with you? I mean, just this week he was in jail, and I got all these messages. Why won't you do something? And all I know is that I can only come here and feel. I know what I'm doing is right, but it's only here that I can have other people validate what I'm doing is right. And the outside world just doesn't understand, and I don't think we can change that, so I have to keep coming here so that I can feel good about what I'm doing and feel okay and not feel like I'm being a bad mother and I'm just letting him stay there and, you know, doing... It's totally against what we've learned our whole lives.
Well, it's like most profound things. We usually have to do... It's not black and white, and we have to do almost seemingly opposite things at once. So we have a situation that we didn't cause, can't cure, and can't control. And we have a situation, we come here and we have to surrender. But then there also comes a point where we have to take action. And I think, you know, there comes a point where we have a role, you know, to play in the process. And I think for me, what I found, I came in and the action I took at first was just to be very, very, very active in Alcoholics Anonymous and just do a hell of a lot of blocking and tackling in Alcoholics Anonymous. And for, I think, for a very considerable period of time, that was exactly what I was supposed to do. And I did not, I had very significant issues in my life, and I almost didn't notice them for the first year of my sobriety. I mean, they were just so zoned out and tuned in, and I just so needed to concentrate on certain things I was doing in AA. And I don't recommend that, that's exactly the way you're supposed to be. That just happens to be the way I was. That just reporting to you the way it was for me. And then little by little, it was almost as if my life got handed back to me. And little by little, I got issues handed to me, you know, like invitations to get back and participate in life. Issues about how I was as a parent, issues about how I was as a worker, issue about how I was as a husband, finance, sex. Every, you know, one. I don't think I could have handled those all at once. I don't think I could have handled instructions about how to do those different things. And as I increased in my growth, and there came a time when the invitation for me wasn't to go to more meetings, where the invitation for me was to start to take actions in those arenas of my life, directed action, maybe with a sponsor or maybe through insights that I got. And there comes a time where the behavior that you can take that's most consistent with Alcoholics Anonymous has to do with changing behavior, not going to another meeting. There comes a time when some of the things that we're supposed to do with our program about gets personal. It's private, where what we have is we have too much activity and not enough action. And the action starts to get personal. And we then start to, you know, where you have to have a kind of a time where you stand in front of the truth and have a discussion with yourself and have another one of those surrender experiences. Wait a minute. He wants it on tape.
Okay.
Say who you
Hello?
Are.
Hello? No. She's got an ego problem. I'm Tom. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Tom.
And I have felt when I came in, I mean, I heard the powerlessness story, and I hear you say I'm not responsible for the alcoholism, and I can't do that much about it, but I am responsible for the cure. And then when I know I'm responsible for that, and then I have to get back into the things I have to do that are responsible to take care of my disease, and then it seems like the next thing I know I'm back into the control situation again. So it sort of goes back and forth, you know. When do I turn this thing over? I can't just, you know, it'd be nice to come in and say I'm just going to turn this thing over and not do anything more about that, but that doesn't work that way. I still have to be responsible for my actions. Anyway, any comments on that I'd like to hear?
Well, I think it's a dichotomy. I think we are an ant on a log going down a river. When it goes around the bend, it looks like we're steering it. You know, but there is, you know, so, I mean, there literally is, and the log's a pretty big log, and you can, and there's lots of different things in lots of different places an ant could go on the log. You know, there's a lot of, but I think you very succinctly put the dilemma. I think it's a dilemma of life. I think it's a dilemma of being a parent. I mean, how the hell do you, you know, I get, my child would break a window, and the, you know, it just seemed like our kids have been often in trouble. And we just would regularly have other parents come to our house to talk to us about our kids. Our kids were in a fight with someone. Like, their kids just never fought. You know, I mean, it just, you know. And in AA, I don't know. So we'd say yes. And they say, well, you guarantee me your child won't do that again. And I say no. And first of all, you know, and they look at me like I was just crazy. And I say, I can't guarantee. I said, I will punish my child. I said, I will support his not doing it again. But I can't guarantee that my child, I don't control my child. And they look, you know, I mean, not always, but some of them would look at me and say, why don't you control your child? Because I don't control me, you know, I mean, that's really going to disappoint you when you you think you're worried about my kid. You've got me out of control in the neighborhood. You've got a much bigger problem. He's only got a slingshot. I've got... and yet I am responsible. Now, being responsible and being powerless at once, okay, maybe is the mystery. Maybe all great things, you know, us doing it and yet turning it over, okay? I mean, then the Bible talks about dying to live and all those different, I mean, I think that is the mystery of life. I really think that's the, you know, the issue that everybody in this program deals with. And I think there's a type of wisdom with it. And I think we have we share that in I mean, just your thing. When someone comes to a meeting and just says, you know, I blew it today. I mean, I just, you know, really got into it with my spouse, or I just went and did something I wasn't supposed to do. I mean, we all have this deep sympathy, you know. We especially have that sympathy and understanding to the new person. I think sometimes we don't have enough the depth of sympathy and understanding to the person who's been sober quite a while and in those circumstances. Just the craziness. I mean, this book talks regularly in the first three chapters about the state of mind preceding the first drink of alcohol. And says that we use some flimsy little excuse, some crazy, you know, you look back on it, and just some crazy thinking goes through that you know, in backwards analysis of it, it wouldn't be an excuse to go do that behavior anyway. It talks about craving, that once we start a behavior, that we get started in a process that we have no control over. Okay. Now, I think if that's true about active alcoholism, I happen to think that those phenomena are what we're dealing with in sobriety. I mean, we're dealing with the same states of mind in sobriety. Because one of the little known, I'll give you a piece of AA trivia. Everybody talks about, you know, changes from the original book to the present book. And one of the changes, we say, you know, we had a spiritual experience and now we talk about a spiritual awakening rather than a spiritual experience. I think it's in the doctor's opinion, they talk about being an ex-alcoholic. They don't, you know, and in the book today, it's an ex-problem drinker. But in the original edition of the big book, okay, it says ex-alcoholic, okay? And, you know, today we know where there aren't ex-alcoholics, okay? And we know, I mean, why am I still so actively involved in my recovery in a vital sort of way with 22 years of sobriety? Hell, it's not for a drinking issue that I had 22 years ago. It's for a living issue that I have today. I mean, I need to be part of this process to keep those principles involved in my life and keep them in action. I mean, part of what I'm dealing with is the problem of being a human being. I mean, and it's almost as if one of the analogies I use, it's almost as if you have to keep the marbles spinning around the sides of the bowl. The resting spot for the marbles is in the bottom of the bowl. So when I stop, when I go asleep, when I turn off, when I forget who I am, when I'm not awake, when I'm not an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous, when I don't have a power greater than myself, when I'm not in action in my program, the damn marble is in the bottom of the bowl. And the resting position has to do with fear and anxiety and demoralization and all the sorts of mental conditions that I identify with my alcoholism. They're always available to me. They're available to me today. And I don't say that like I'm some sort of goof. I mean, I don't say that like I'm a sick person. I just think that's a fact. That, I mean, disappointingly today, with 22 years of sobriety, I can summon a level of craziness. It's just a gift. I mean, it's just a gift. You know, and we support each other. I'm not supporting craziness. I'm not regularly crazy, but I mean, I want you to know that at any given time, I think I can, without a thought, I have all those instinctive reactions, and I'm no longer willing to. One of the things that is so awesome, one of the most wonderful things I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. As a wise man once told me, he says, you have no control about your thoughts or reactions. If someone drops a hammer on your foot, you will, I don't care how old you are or how sober you are, you may very well want to punch him in the nose. I mean, you know, it depends upon your instinctive reactions. You may want to run away, but, I mean, you're going to have an instinctive reaction that you will not have much control of. It's just going to flat be there in front of your nose. But because of my being able to walk with you and because of my being able to work in Alcoholics Anonymous, I seldom punch people in the nose. I don't slap my children like I did at one time. Okay, I don't do a number of behaviors that I used to instinctively do when I got in front of something that I was afraid of and didn't know what to do, because I now have a level, you've given me some space between me and me. I have just enough distrust, just enough healthy distrust of my own actions sometime, that I will take a look at a standard other than my own standard, other than what my own ego wants to do. You put something between me and me at times when my emotions dominate my life. And that's how powerlessness today works positively in my life. It gives me an access to something other than my ego at a time when I'm about ready to go take a course of action which is destructive to my life. And when we want to do something, we don't want access to that power. We want the opposite. Okay? We don't want the answer, we want the problem.
Yeah, when I remember when I was in treatment last time, when I could seem to identify it, it was about 2 weeks into the treatment period, and I didn't know what was happening, but I must have went through that surrendering process, and I know I must have, because almost immediately my addictive psyche nature was selecting one of my other addictions, because I started getting away from the alcohol, and I could almost feel myself looking for another comfort zone. Almost immediately, I can still remember that. And I didn't know what was happening, though. When I come out of that treatment, of course, I come in AA, and AA got me, and I more or less began the process. But I believe that, for me, the thing's a catch-22 process. You know, the minute we stop trying to stay with this recovery process that we don't know how to do, then these other addictions will kill us anyways. And eventually we'll get so frustrated we'll go back to the one we love the best. And the only one I'm really comfortable with is my alcohol. And I believe that's probably why they said in that book, and I always wondered that, and I've just been talking about it lately, is they didn't say alcoholism is cunning, baffling, and powerful. And they didn't say the alcoholic was cunning, baffling, and powerful. They said alcohol. And I believe that when they said that, they knew that's the very thing I love the most. And the very thing I'll always go to when I'm really, really, really up against it. If everything else fails in my life, I'm going to go for the alcohol. And I believe that's what they meant, you know. And so, for me, even though it's frustrating and you lose a lot of heart and it's distasteful at times, you got to stay in this process. You got to just stay in the process. And I keep saying to myself, you're not going to get a goddamn report card. I keep waiting for a report card to come in the mail. Ain't going to be no fucking report cards. My report card is not drinking today. I must be doing something good, and I feel good about not drinking. And I think that means I'm doing something right, I guess.
And I do think the world gives you a report card, not like an authoritative teacher. I think the world reports back to us regularly. We don't often listen to it. But I do think that the world will report back that what you're doing doesn't work, or the world will report back that what you're doing, it confirms what works and disconfirms what doesn't work. I didn't notice that for a long time. I thought it was different. Yeah, Tom. We got a mic back.
Hi, Bob. I'm John. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, John.
This one ought to be a good one for you. as it relates to alcohol and powerlessness and my surrender, that was really easy for me. You know, I just nearly drank myself to death. The question is as far as it relates to the other issues in my life, I felt like it was interesting that you related our intellect to dealing with the problem and getting to the solution. Well, my question is, how do you surrender? You know, my mind says, oh, well, I'll make a decision. I'm going to surrender on this and be powerless over my finances or my relationships. You know, how do you do that? I mean...
Okay. This may really disappoint you, but you do it by doing it. Problems are... What time are we stopping this for the first coffee break? What? Maybe we'll handle this and take a... Problems are kept in place with a lie. The lie that kept our alcoholism in place, of course, is that alcohol was not our problem. It's a funny sort of thing. We know that alcoholism is a problem, and drinking was a symptom of the problem. But each of us kept telling ourselves we really don't have a problem. The need, alcohol was a treasure. Alcohol was an answer. Alcohol and drugs were primary. They were just awesomely important in our lives, and we protected them with everything we had. We just kept people away. We didn't have conversation with people or contact with people who were a threat to our use. Right? Okay. We just didn't want to be around people like that. So we surrounded ourselves with people who kind of supported our view of the universe. And so we built a wall of protection around the biggest problem and issue we had was our alcoholism. Okay? Now, if you talk to people at some time, when our drinking became obvious and kind of undeniable, we would talk to people and say, boy, we'd like to stop, or we wouldn't want that problem. We started to tell kind of lies or stories about our drinking. Okay, but there came a time where we stood in front of our alcoholism, we stood in front of it like the truth, with all our clothes off, stark naked, in front of our alcoholism. When we stood in front of that, our lives changed. There's something about the truth that is so profound that when you stand in front of it, with nothing else between it and you, your life's going to change. You know how when we say in the program, as you may come to, if you come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and you get exposed to the answer to the problem, you may go back and drink, but it is not going to be the same. There's going to be something that's going to hound you. Okay, that's, I think, what truth does. Now, most of us, when we have other issues in our lives, and I suggest to you that there may not be other issues, but when we have other issues in our lives, maybe the same issue with different clothes on. When I had a gambling issue in my life, you talk to me, I say, boy, I really would like to quit gambling. Go talk to my wife and find out if she thought I wanted to quit gambling. Go talk to my business partner. I mean, the truth was, I didn't want to quit gambling. Now, I talk like I wanted to quit gambling. I don't want to quit gambling. You know, I talk like I'd like to get up in the morning and go to work. I talk like I'd like to stay at work. I mean, I didn't want to do those things. So it was a lie. I mean, those things were complaints. Gee, I wish my life was different. What do you want to do about it? Oh, nothing. Oh, nothing. I mean, you know, there are two things that keep problems in place in your life. They're like if you had a very serious problem, when I have a very serious problem in my life, the biggest protection I could ever have to not have to deal with it would be confusion. I mean, if I really wanted to wrap it in something so that I'd never have to deal with it, I'd wrap it in confusion. Gee, I just love to do it. I don't know how. How do you do that? How do you work? I mean, when you ask great questions, how do you work? Now, you don't want an answer, because if I ever got the answer to that question, I might have to go work. You know, I mean, I don't want to go work. I want to ask the question, how do you work? I mean, now, it doesn't matter that there's 100 million people in the United States that work. You know, I mean, I'm asking it like, what's the meaning of life? Like, you just, you know, like it's a mystery. I mean, there are people with IQs, you know, 2/3 of what I've got walking around, and they work. And they just go do it. You know, it's the damnedest thing I've ever seen. No. I mean, I really hope they're not happy. But they go. I'm telling you that I asked those questions for a long time. So the two things that I see that I wrap my issues in and that other people wrap their issues in is, first of all, confusion. So they keep asking questions about it. Because as long as you keep asking questions about it, you may not have to do anything about it. And then once you get the questions, you know, start to fray a little bit at the edges, you know, when the group says, you know, it's the sixth time that dork has talked to me about that problem, or I'm his eighth sponsor, the other one is apathy. I mean, I know what to do. I just can't get myself to do it. I mean, those are the two things. You know, I either don't know what to do and I'm confused, or I know what to do and I can't motivate myself to get to it. And those are the experience of those, I think, are very real, and that's what I did with my alcoholism, and that's what I've done with every serious problem in my life. The truth is that every serious, persistent problem in my life, I planted, I put in place, I fertilized it, I built a fence around it, I put the guard dog out in front, okay, And anybody who got within a 15-block radius of my problem started to experience resistance to their presence. Okay? When they even got near it. Now, you talk to me, and I'd say, how do you get rid of that? Well, I think if you got the guys with the submachine guns and just ask them to kind of move away, Bob, you know, and then those Dobermans, God, Bob, I mean, I really think those Dobermans are a little too much, you know, and I don't think the fence needs to be 15 feet tall, Bob. I mean, God, if it was about a 4-foot fence, Bob, people might be able to leap over it and help you, you know, but I mean, 16 feet's excessive with the concertina wire on the top and those electrical charges, Bob, they're killing people. All you got to do is maim them, they'll go away, you know. I say, well, I mean, I really want to deal with this. I mean, I really would like to. I mean, do you really think it would help if I took the fence down? Well, see, I don't know. We are awesome. I mean, we are awesome with our duality and wanting to deal with problems. I mean, we're dealing with exactly, I mean, they're just so important to us. And your alcoholism was so important to you that you almost died. That's how you attach to things. I mean, the issues that we run into with stability is the second layer of recovery. Once you first get rid of when you get abstinence and you start to get the principles start to act in your life, and as you go forward, as you grow, you move forward. As you move forward, you start to bump into you. You bump into other issues in recovery. And you do it because you're growing. Now, it seems like the opposite. It seems like you're discovering problems. I mean, we are the goofiest people. We feel bad about discovering problems. We do. I mean, you start to discover. So the first thing we do is we hide it, or we lie about it for a while, and then, you know, I mean, it just keeps coming up, and it comes up so profoundly that you get to the point where you almost can't hide it anymore. But I mean, almost all of us have two or three major themes in our life that have a persistence that is just awesome, and that will be the test, I think, ongoingly, as to what the quality of your experience of recovery is. And some of us who keep getting those ongoing requests who don't deal with it will go back drinking. And I think that's what drives, you know, if only half the people who come to Alcoholics Anonymous recover, there's a hell of a lot of people who go back. You know, if someone came in this room and said, how many people in this room are going to die of alcoholism? I think the answer is half. In this room. I mean, that's crazy. But I mean, the truth is if we convene this meeting 20 years from now, there'd be a hell of a lot of people who would not be in this room. The disease is awesome. And we're so darn used to people getting well from the disease. I mean, we just start to assume people get well. And I think that's wonderful. I think the